You know, in my home state of Delaware is WVUD, 91.3
That's
FM.
Right.
It's on my radio. It's on our house.
The Vice President of the United States.
You're listening to the Arsenal for Democracy, forging and preparing a new generation for leadership. Now, here's your host, Bill Humphrey.
For 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. I'm coming to you on June 1st, 2014 from my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, co-host Nate and I discuss issues surrounding gun control and gun ownership in the United States. Then we look at the Veterans Affairs scandal and what needs to happen to fix it. All that is coming up right now. Arsenal for Democracy is usually recorded in studio every Sunday and is available for download on Wednesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it from WVUD.org on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. This is the Arsenal for Democracy. You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me in studio this week in Newton, Massachusetts, is my co-host, Nate. Nate, welcome back to the program.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
All right, Greg's off this week. We're going to start off with talking about gun control. There was another incident of a mass shooting, although in this case it also involved a mass knifing, but that wasn't really the objective initially. It just worked out that he didn't get very far with the gun part of it. There's also this big component that we could talk about another time, or you can look at the articles that I wrote on that on arsenalfordemocracy.com about his sort of male supremacy ideology thing that motivated this attack. But the thing that we want to talk about this week is the gun side of it. Gun control is something that we've increasingly been talking about on Arsenal for Democracy after kind of avoiding it for a long time. But as I've said in previous segments, I just kind of got to the point where I was tired of us not talking about it. Nate and I are both from Massachusetts. Massachusetts, as most gun owners will have heard from myth and lore, is not the most friendly place for guns, although in some areas it's relatively flexible.
I'm sure there are plenty of guns out in Western Mass.
There are, but legally speaking, compared to a lot of other states, it's not as open to gun owners. There are a lot more restrictions than in other states. Additionally, of course, there is a gun manufacturer in Massachusetts, a major gun manufacturer that's based in Massachusetts. But
a lot of defense contractors too. But
yeah, that's guns on a different scale.
Yeah, big guns.
So we come at it from that background, so obviously that's something to keep in mind, but we've also been plenty of other places. You know, I have a lot of family members who are gun owners. I know plenty of people who are gun owners. I know people who have perfectly acceptable reasons to have guns in that they're in the complete middle of nowhere and have a lot of, you know, dangerous animals, or they're in the middle of areas that get very little police response, whether it's a dense area or a rural area. And I know lots of gun owners who are perfectly responsible. I also know a lot of gun owners who are not responsible and who also say a lot of crazy things, which is not to say that they say crazy things because they own guns. Obviously, a lot of our listeners are going to disagree with my interpretation of that, but that's kind of what Nate and I wanted to get into a little bit and talk about, which is some of these sort of unreasonable positions. Now, to give you a sense of kind of how unreasonable some of this is, I was working on an article at my main place of work. Anyway, I was working on an op-ed there. It was not under my name. I was brushing up an op-ed by our CEO and president, who is actually from Germany. Europe also definitely not very gun friendly these days. They make a lot of guns, but they're not
the best ones.
They're not very supportive of general public access to guns. And so he was writing yet another op-ed about this latest incident and saying why it was important. And one of the immediate responses that someone wrote was, in addition to saying that he was stupid, was, "I hope you die with an unregistered firearm." And I just thought it was interesting that the argument is often made that the importance of defending the Second Amendment at all costs is that if the Second Amendment goes away or is restricted in some way, then the First Amendment is next. Now, we talk a lot about the First Amendment on this show, and that the idea is that you can't have the right to free speech and free expression taken away by the government, but it's okay for there to be consequences from other people. But it's okay for there to be consequences within the context of other people expressing things back at you or expressing speech. It's not acceptable to say that your freedom of speech can be taken away by someone killing you. I mean, obviously someone can make that threat, I guess, but I'm saying that if your goal is to defend the First Amendment and people's ability to express themselves, you can't be threatening to shoot people or wishing that that would happen to people who express an opinion that's different than yours. That's so paradoxical that it's just absurd, but it's something that comes up time and again. It's constantly saying, I hope that someone who supports gun control gets killed. You also have incidents where people then carry those threats to other levels. These are things that we hear all the time. It's really kind of absurd.
I mean, just in this case, we are seeing, there have been several shootings. Just reading up on the one in University of California, Santa Barbara, a guy goes after sorority houses and starts shooting people from BMW, speeding down the street, you know, really terrifying situation. But I mean, I think the fact that we're gonna have to deal with is these types of incidents will just continue to happen if you let basically unfettered access to guns to pretty much anyone who wants one. And some of those people that want them may include people with various personality disorders or people that are not completely in control.
Or people who are influenced by a particular radical ideology.
Yeah, exactly. And then that leads to people shooting other people with guns for no reason, or reasons that they've concocted in their head that involve, in this case, he was very against minorities, women, and interracial marriage, stuff like that. So, you know, your typical laundry list. Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that we're going to have to face facts with is this kind of stuff will continue to happen. You just have to deal with it unless there's actual serious gun control, which, you know, ever since the whole Newtown shooting has pretty much stalled. Did any bill get passed?
No, I don't think it got voted down in the Senate.
So, I mean, we can be shocked and appalled, but this is really nothing surprising. And I mean, we're pretty much just going to continue to have these random incidents at a couple month intervals. You know, someone who, from just reading about this guy, seemed like he had been bullied a lot. He may have had high functioning Asperger's syndrome.
None of which makes someone go on a shooting spree. You have to add some sort of other component on top of that.
Right. I'm just trying to add a little bit of the context in terms of, like, this person may not have felt particularly, you know, embraced by society, and that can lead to, you know, hateful feelings towards others and sort of a cycle. And then, you know, you add a firearm to that, then all of a sudden you're shooting people and stabbing people on sorority row, which is just ridiculous. But, you know, that happens. So I think the thing we should be focusing on is, I mean, and I guess we sort of all have to ask this question, and I guess we're sort of just kind of tacitly ignoring it right now, is should we live in a society where pretty much anyone can get a gun and do with it however they please? Is that something that's good for all of us? And I would say probably not.
Right.
But that's not the prevailing opinion in America. So, I mean, all I can do right now is, I guess, maybe hope I'm not the one of the people getting shot for no reason.
And there's been opposition to just so many basic things. I mean, for example, there have been people who've argued, and it's been passed in certain states, that there should be a limit, for example, that you can only buy one gun a month, which, if you're not a gun owner, the idea that you'd need to buy more than one gun a month is something that's so outside of your frame of reference. I mean, feel free to explain it to us or whatever, but that's seen as some sort of tyrannical control, just limiting it to one a month. And the number of gun-owning households in the country is still a significant portion, but it's about a third of the country right now, down from half in the 1980s. Yet the number of guns has gone up, and especially the number of guns per person who owns a gun. So the people who have guns is shrinking, but those people have more guns. And some of that is certainly just for, you know, collector value or recreational whatever, but some of it seems to be for some more questionable and possibly nefarious motivations.
Yeah, I mean, just sometimes during this debate, you come across people with opinions that just seem so far outside of, I mean, I guess, reality, that it's a little confusing. You're a little unsure what they think is the actual current situation in the United States. It seems like some of these people think that we're basically on the edge of a revolution, and basically blood is about to flow in the streets, and we all need guns to defend ourselves. I'm kind of interested in just getting a gun, just to have one, you know, maybe use it for target practice or something like that, and then be able to express my opinions as a gun owner, but obviously with a somewhat unorthodox view compared to, say, the NRA. It just, I don't think guns need to be an identity, and for some people it is.
Right.
It's okay to have a gun and use it if you want to shoot cans or squirrels, I guess, in the backyard. some people do that. It's okay as long as you're not putting anyone else in danger. And, you know, when you are carrying guns, packing them all the time, having a bunch of them in your house,
walking around publicly with huge assault rifles just to show you can,
you know, not properly locking them, having a place where your kids can get them, that's when it starts getting dangerous. And I don't think, you know, we should be taking the situation all that lightly. And it's like, oh, it's just it's policy issue, it's just politics. Well, I mean, it's not really politics when someone gets shot. So I really do think we need to actually have a serious discussion as a country as to what sort of more common sense limits you might be able to have. And, you know, in some ways, it's probably a little impossible. I mean, just we've reached a point in this country where there's so much access to guns that it's pretty tough to put the genie back in the bottle on that one. I mean, there are a lot of countries where gun crime is just not that high because it's hard to get a gun, even for like petty criminals, you know? So, I mean, I'm just reading an article here about biometric guns. And basically this is a system where, you know, you have a fingerprint lock or some other type of system where only you are being able to fire the gun. And there are all these different startups, some of which like are actually built into the gun, some of which you can be like attaching them to your gun. And that's I think a good way to make sure that, you know, you're the one who's using it. No one else can get access to it. No one can use it against you. It can't get stolen and used. You know, these are all things that happen pretty commonly. I think there's this myth that, we need guns to prevent the burglars. You know, they're breaking into the house at night and trying to steal stuff, trying to hurt our families, and we need guns to protect ourselves. I'm just curious as to, you know, what percent of that time that actually happens as opposed to, you know, maybe the kid comes home late at night or had already snuck out and you think that it's a burglar. I mean, maybe you don't shoot the kid, but, you know, there's some sort of confrontation, or it just doesn't seem like you constantly hear reports of man defends house from a burglar rapist. You know, it's sort of stuff happens, but not commonly.
Whereas you do hear all the time about the other scenario.
Accidental shootings and all sorts of just guns going off while kids are playing with. I think there was a report recently about the cricket rifle. It's like a gun for kids, and kids were playing with it and went off and hit someone in the head. So, I mean,
That happens all the time. The CDC reports that at least 60 or so children, for the last year reportable, I think was like 62 in 2010 or something, killed. That's a very low-end estimate. Yeah. According to the research by David Waldman, because he found last year more than that in 2013, and this year alone, in the first 5 months, so up to like Memorial Day, there were over 40 children who died in gun-related accidents. And if you look at 2013, which he had done the research on last year, it was the same exact figure. So you could get that accidental, and that's just by going through local media reports. And you say, okay, this is, you know, within the same five-month period, both years, there were over 40 children who are no longer with us because a gun was improperly secured, or a kid was playing with, or something like that happened, and a kid was killed by a gun going off.
And I mean, this sort of goes to a large point about the culture of guns. In some cases, and certainly most gun owners, I think, are very conscientious about this, but some people treat them like toys, and they're right. Not. I mean, I love first-person shooters. It's fun to, you know, shoot guns in those, and all the different types. And I mean, as I said before, I'd be interested in maybe buying one just to have that, you know, experience firsthand. But these aren't things that we should let children have access to, or, you know, you just have to be extremely careful. And I think some people just use them kind of cavalierly. They just have them lying around, and, you know, that's when accidents happen.
Right.
So,
because right after that UCSB shooting, another kid nearby, also in the same, you know, on campus or whatever, had his gun collection at least temporarily taken away from him by the sheriff's department because he was, quote, playing around with his Glock, and it went off and almost killed his neighbor in the next apartment over when it went through the wall. And so they took his 7 legally owned guns, including an assault rifle, and they took away his 900 some odd rounds of ammunition. And, you know, this is someone who is in a safe environment in terms of crime and, you know, home invasion type situations. It's a relatively safe environment at a college campus. Obviously, there's, you know, always going to be some break-ins, but it's relatively safe. And he's got this huge armory and then is, quote, playing around with his gun. And that's to Nate's point. These aren't toys, and they get treated like toys, you know, and that's not even getting into the people who improperly secure their guns because they want immediate access to them for their weird nightmare scenarios, but just the people who are kind of being negligent, that's a huge problem too. And this is how, you know, kids are getting killed. Because those reports of the accidental discharges, that's just for the, you know, what David Waldman and people like him find just from looking at news reports every day and every week. And you might say, if you're a callous person, you might say, oh, well, it's only 60 kids who died. But the reports by the Pediatrics Journal study that I talked about last fall found that 7,000 American children go to the emergency room with gunshot-related injuries each year.
Yeah, not everyone who gets shot dies.
Right.
So, we just have a lot of kids out there with bullet holes in them because, I mean, just there was an accident.
Right. And that is not being talked about enough. That's a really serious problem. You know, we could go into, and I'd encourage people to look at the articles that I wrote on arsenalfordemocracy.com, but there's also the fact that including the Fort Hood shooting and including UCSB shooting, these mass shooting incidents, mass casualty shooting incidents, within that period of New Year's Day, January 1st, 2014, to Memorial Day, 2014, that was the 11th shooting. 11 shootings, big shootings in 5 months, using the DOJ definition, which says at least four people killed by gunshot. Usually one of the people is the shooter in most of these cases. And the reason that most of these didn't make the news is, of course, because there's a lot of domestic violence incidents involved. Someone basically going around and mowing down everyone in their house in a rage and then killing themselves. And these are, the media just said, oh, it's a murder-suicide, like as if that's some weird romantic Romeo and Juliet concept, as opposed to, no, this was typically it's male on female, but not always. But a male taking out his alpha aggression or whatever, or really beta aggression, but aided by the power of a gun and just killing a whole bunch of people in the house. You know, we see these incidents all the time, and they wouldn't go away entirely if guns were better controlled, but it would certainly reduce them, because a lot of these situations happen, much as we found in the research with suicides by gunshot. It happens because it's easily accessible. It's not like someone in most of these cases made an elaborate plan to go kill a whole bunch of people. Obviously, in the mass shooting incidents like this, they do. But in the case of the domestic incidents that result in a whole bunch of people getting murdered, those typically aren't planned for a long time in advance. Neither are suicides. It's usually a passing thing that goes through the person's head and then they go do it, which is in no way an excuse for it, of course, but it's the idea that a lot of these would be reduced if it weren't so easily accessible, if there weren't just guns everywhere in all these incidents, or they weren't so easily obtained legally. And you know, that's the problem, is that any of these really reasonable restrictions are not supported by this very loud, politically powerful faction, although within gun owners themselves, those people are not actually the majority. You know, we've been talking about these responsible gun owners periodically here. Yeah, there are responsible gun owners, and they don't have these weird conspiracy theories about why they need their guns. They can provide you with specific, concrete reasons why they need their guns, and reasons that, moreover, are actually backed up by statistics and things that are reasonably plausible scenarios that have probably already happened.
Yeah, I mean, if you're living in like out west, and like there are a bunch of meth tweakers running around and like stealing your stuff from your farm or something, I can see owning a gun, like to either threaten them away or whatever, make sure they don't try to hurt you or something, but I just don't think that's the case with the majority of people
right.
with guns.
And these things that this loud minority faction that's filled up with all these conspiracy theories in the one sector, and then these theories about how they're going to prevent these home invasions, they won't lock their guns away from children. They won't allow regulatory inspections to make sure that they have proper locking and safing systems. They don't want it. They're protesting and sending death threats to gun manufacturers and gun stores for trying to make and sell guns with biometric locks. They don't want to allow background checks for the most part. They don't want to close the gun show loophole to prevent people from buying at gun shows without any check. They don't want the doctor asking. This is why they opposed the Surgeon General nomination recently. They don't want doctors asking you if you keep a gun in the house, even though that's a known public health risk factor. And they don't want to restrict general ownership of military grade firearms that are solely designed to kill people in combat situations. And this is the huge kicker. You know, most of those things, with the possible exception of the assault weapons ban, most of those things like child lock rules and background checks and stuff are supported by like 92% or so of Americans, at least 90% of Americans in every poll consistently. So a huge number of Americans must be supporting those. And then there's some things that are fairly reasonable in my opinion, but are deemed to be totally unreasonable by this loud minority faction. action, which is this one, keeping track of who owns these guns. Guns are intended to be used as deadly weapons, whether it's, you know, deadly against a deer or in most cases deadly against a person. Guns are designed and always have been to be used as deadly weapons, and we don't keep track of who owns them. Now, ironically, according to some investigative journalism done by BuzzFeed, the NRA actually has a pretty comprehensive list of every gun owner in the country, which seems a little creepy to me, but the governments do not have comprehensive lists, even at the county level in most cases. And the theory here is that somehow if there's a list, then it means the government could come and take your guns away later. But folks, that's not realistically what's going to happen. And it's always this slippery slope argument. If they give the government a list of the guns, they're going to take all your guns away when they try to roll in as a totalitarian state or whatever. Even setting aside the implausibility of fighting off a totalitarian government with you and your Glock, there is the simple reality that a car, which is not intended to be a deadly weapon but does cause fatalities, has to be registered with the state. It has to go in for inspections. There are rules to what you can sell with cars. There are rules to what things you can buy. There are rules to what must be included by the manufacturers. You have to go through a licensing process. You have to renew your license periodically. That's not even intended as a deadly weapon, and they keep track of it comprehensively. Not because they're going to try to take your cars away. You know, these things aren't tyrannical. It's this idea of like, oh, well, if they put in gun control, what's next? I don't know. Did you ever consider the possibility that there is nothing next? That they just want to be able to keep track of it because there's a lot of criminal activities that could be prevented by having some sort of way of keeping track of these things? It's not automatically tyranny to have record keeping. If it were, the NRA wouldn't be keeping records as comprehensively as they did. And that's the problem here. Why is it that, because they'll say, oh, well, if you know, this kid used a BMW, why don't we ban BMWs or something? It's like, that's not the point. That's not a deadly weapon that he was using. You know, he may have been misusing it, but just because he used a car, just because the Tsarnaev brothers used a car, doesn't mean that this automatically makes vehicles weapons that have to be taken away. But guns aren't meant for anything else. Their intention and the reason they've been created is to be a deadly weapon. Really, you're going to tell me that it's unreasonable to ask that we have a way of keeping track of these guns. Now, I understand a lot of people are going to be upset listening about this, but before you write in to me, just keep in mind, am I really asking something all that unreasonable? And are you about to send me a threat just because I disagree with you, which seems like not a very good way of upholding the Bill of Rights to me, as I said before? This is the problem. It's this like view that, oh, well, either the government's going to take away my guns or I'm not going to be able to get to my guns fast enough to fight off this entire drug cartel that's banging down the door of my house, because that's the other scenario. And as Nate said, you know, these scenarios where you actually successfully prevent a home invasion don't really actually happen that much. We've got to take a quick break now, but stick around. We'll be back in just a moment with more on this topic. You're still listening to Arsenal for Democracy from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. I'm Bill Humphrey. In studio with me is Nate. This half hour, we're talking about gun control and reducing preventable gun deaths. Before the break, I raised the issue of home defense, so let's get into that.
Yeah, I'm just looking at a Harvard study right here that says about 1% of Americans have used guns in their homes, but over 50% were used in an aggressive manner. So they were not so much defending as threatening others or potentially killing them. So, you know, 50% is right. A lot.
So 1% of Americans have used a gun in the home for some reason, and of those, half were using them probably in domestic incidents or various arguments.
Probably solves the argument pretty quickly. So, you know, I guess that counts as using a gun to defend yourself in the home.
And other statistics to keep in mind, you know, the violent crime rates and homicides have dropped off dramatically since 1992. I think those rates are about half of what they were in 1992, or at least they were around the height or so of the recession, which is normally when the, you know, most violence happens. Right. I mean, that was part of why it really peaked around 92, was there was a recession then. But instead, this recession has been a lot less violent. There's been a whole range of factors in that. But just this scenario that, oh, I'm going to be murdered in my bed or whatever, or, you know, I've got to defend my castle. My home is my castle. I've got to defend it against these violent intruders. I mean, that's just certainly there are home invasions, but the scenarios where your home is being robbed by, you know, someone who knows that that you're home, I mean, is not that common, right? Unless I guess you've provoked someone into specifically targeting you. But most of the time, you know, the people, yeah, they don't want to get shot or get caught and sent to the police. So they try to break into your house when you're not there. If they, you know, if they're not going to intentionally go be like, oh yeah, I'm going to go break into this house when I know the owners are home. And then they say, oh, well, you know, you got to have everyone packing heat, or at least some people, because then they don't want to take the chances. No, there's a whole range of reasons why they don't want to take the chances. No, they don't want to get shot by you, but you're not going to actually be foiling these scenarios in most cases. Yeah, in certain cases, that might happen. If you're in complete middle of nowhere, or if you're in the, you know, the deepest part of the inner city where the predominantly white police force refuses to go, yeah, you may have a problem that you need to have guns. And we've said that that's a legitimate scenario. But
there are plenty of legitimate reasons to own guns. It just... But I don't think we should be anti-safety measures because of the threat that, you know, guns could propose.
And the idea that you in your exurban or suburban home is going to foil property crime, just from about, you know, the 5 years or so before 2011, property crime went down by 0.8% in the country. And that was the smallest decrease of all the other things. Most of these things, you know, really decreased. That was over 3 years, excuse me. Most of these things peaked in 92 and have either been dropping consistently or remaining constant after dropping significantly for a while. Violent crimes fell by 12% from 2006 to 2011. I mean, most of these statistics have been dropping off. These scenarios is less and less likely, even as the number of homes with guns in them has dropped from half to a third of American households. And so the scenario is being ginned up by the people in the NRA, by the gun manufacturers, to make people have these, like, fantasy scenarios where they're going to defend the situation. And more times than not, I think they either end up accidentally shooting a family member or misusing it during, you know, a domestic dispute or something, or they perceive some threat that isn't real and end up killing someone that way. And then that's been extended outside of the home into these stand your ground laws that almost always result in people of color being killed. And a lot of these scenarios that are being kind of spun to sell guns, and that you know, you'll see the ads talking about stopping power and all these things, like about how you're gonna, you know, defend yourself and stop this person in their tracks. Well, okay, these scenarios a lot of times are weighted historically in terms of these racial dynamics that are extremely problematic, and people want to deny that. But if you just look at the scope of U.S. history, a lot of stuff involving guns has been intensely tied up in white people or other people being able to resist the black population or defend themselves against perceived threats from the black population. And that's never really been that realistic of a scenario, even during the times when there were potentially slave revolts happening. But a lot of these, you know, arming everyone to provide a militia back home stuff from around when the Constitution was written and then for a half century after that, was explicitly for the purpose of being able to suppress a slave revolt quickly. I mean, there's that problematic history. And yeah, that was a while ago, but a lot of that rhetoric is still kind of around the fringes. It hasn't really completely gone away.
I mean, if Red Dawn happens and the Cubans invade or some of the North Koreans, something happens, yeah, we're going to want a lot of people with assault weapons out in the forests and mountains and
but
stuff
I'm pretty sure
to defend us against the enemy. I don't really see that happening anytime soon, so...
I also think that if there's a scenario like that, which is pretty unlikely, someone or some other
country... The government
will
be handing out guns at that point. Forget
exactly.
About taking them away.
Or the government will be getting all of its allies to hand over guns. I mean, think about the U.S. sends guns to all these different conflicts when we want to help them, quote-unquote, help them overthrow tyranny. And I'm sure that other countries would do the same for us. And, you know, if you really want to look at a fantasy scenario of taking down a totalitarian regime, you're going to want to look at the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc countries. There wasn't some armed revolution in the streets.
Another thing I think we should talk about is the whole video game aspect of it. And this especially happened after Newtown, where the NRA, Wayne LaPierre, the president or CEO or whatever, talked about how, quote, there exists in this country a callous, corrupt, and corrupting shadow industry that sells and sows violence against its own people through vicious, violent video games with names like Bulletstorm, Grand Theft Auto, Mortal Kombat, and Splatterhouse. Okay, Mortal Kombat doesn't really involve guns. We're just going to leave that to the side. It's just martial arts. The NRA has actually made its own violent video game called Trigger Man, or it has partnered with a entertainment company, which produced the NRA Gun Club game. And the same company, Crave Entertainment, made a game called Trigger Man, which are basically a mob assassin, mob hitman. Looks like it has terrible graphics, but you never know. So, I mean, I guess the thing we should talk about is this sort of seems like a bit of a red herring in the sense that there are a lot of countries around the world where people play video games
They play the same games that we do.
They play them more, in fact. I mean, internet addiction is like actually a serious problem in some places in Korea. So, I mean, if all these people are playing the same video games, why aren't there, you know, tons of mass shootings in Japan and Korea? Is it because there really aren't as many guns and people are not, you know, don't have easy access to them? Is it because somehow Japanese and Korean people are less violent than Americans? I mean, I don't think that's true, but it just what could be the X factor that leads to Americans getting, you know, all riled up by video games and looking to kill people, and, you know, people in those countries are not? Or, you know, just the millions of people that play video games in the U.S. and don't murder anyone. It seems like such a cop-out or like a way to deflect responsibility from yourself to go after video games. And I really lost a lot of respect for Hillary Clinton back in the day when she sort of took up that cut, when she was sort of trying to, you know, triangulate and all that stuff leading up to the 2008 presidential election, going after flag burning and stuff like that. Some nonsense. But yeah, I mean, it seemed like there was a time years ago, and obviously after Newtown as well, but, you know, with the whole GTA stuff and all that, where video games are somehow this huge problem that are causing violence amongst our youth. And a couple of years later, that doesn't really seem as big of a concern now, just because it's pretty much been shown to not really have a significant effect. I mean, people that go on mass shootings are usually, you know, they have a variety of different triggers and reasons why they go out doing it, but I don't think we've really found a case where video games were, like, the main cause. I mean, maybe these people played video games, but, I mean, it seems like they had a lot of other problems, too.
Right. I mean, with many of these things, the issue is, like, in isolation, none of them add up to anything. It's just a question of which compounding things, you know, add on, and video games seems to really be the least of them. I mean, just the number of people who play video games, violent video games included in this country, relative to the number of people on these
Call of Duty, Black Ops, like, that's a huge game. I mean, Bill, are you going to go out and shoot people because you just picked up a copy of old Call of Duty?
I mean, if they're Nazis in 1940s occupied France, then
if they're Nazi zombies, got to kill the Nazis.
If they're Nazi zombies, yeah.
I don't think that edition has
Nazis. No, that one doesn't have Nazi zombies.
That's the best mode. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like that is a proximate cause. So why are we talking about it? I thought that was really stupid when Wayne LaPierre was trying to, you know, do a little spinning.
Right.
Stuff.
It's a misguided misdirection. And it's one of many things that's brought up. It's constantly that someone suggests gun control and they say, but what about this thing? Well, okay, what about that thing? The common denominator in all of these situations is seems to be plentifully legal access to guns. Again, Nate and I recognize that we can't eliminate all of these incidents from happening. And yes, some people will acquire guns illegally, but you don't need to make it effortless to acquire guns. That doesn't need to be the case. And the fact that something like we said earlier about having a limit of buying one gun per month, so you're capped at buying a whole 12 guns in 1 year, that's somehow tyrannical? I mean, come on. That's just, there's no way that that's an unreasonable restriction. And I think most people and most gun owners support most of these restrictions, but the NRA and some of their supporters have become so hardline and inflexible that they're not willing to consider any of these things. And the reasons given, I mean, I think that people that are in that position think that folks like Nate and me, we don't understand gun culture, we don't understand gun ownership or any of these things. I've handled guns and been around guns since I was a little kid, almost as long as I can remember. I don't own one. It's not really my jam. I don't want to own one, but we do understand.
Plus, I don't even know where we could shoot it around here, really.
Right, because, well, there's so many legal restrictions around here in Massachusetts, but I don't...
Maybe go into a forest or something and no one hears you. But
yeah, well, not on Sundays. It's banned on Sundays.
So. Oh, puritanical restriction.
Yeah, well, you can't fire your blunderbuss on the street, Nate. That's just basic.
When was that law passed? In like 1780?
But yeah, so you think that we don't have any conception of where you're coming from. We do, and we're saying it doesn't make sense and doesn't hold up with the facts, and We're not trying to take away everyone's guns. We're trying to reduce both gun violence and accidental gun deaths in this country, which are far too plentiful. And there's so many reasonable steps that could be taken to help with that goal. It's not automatically tyranny, but there, you know, the gun restrictions, there was a big wave of attempts to pass gun restrictions. They passed in a couple states like Delaware. And then other than that, nothing happened after Sandy Hook, except that gun laws and gun controls were actually rolled back in most states where any action was taken one way or the other. That's what happened after Sandy Hook, and that's not the solution. More guns is not the solution to gun violence and accidental gun problems in the United States. This is constantly pitched as the scenario, but if actual trained law enforcement has trouble in these shootouts of actually stopping the people, and the more likely scenario is that someone will accidentally shoot the wrong person thinking it's the shooter, you know, in the heat of the moment, most people, no matter how much practice they have, and some gun owners don't take it seriously enough, in the heat of the moment, it's very unlikely that more guns is going to solve the problem. And it's a lot more likely that it's just going to be more stray bullets flying around and potentially injuring more people. More guns is not the answer. We have to look seriously at some of these responsible controls. And this is the part that we've been prevented from really looking at up to this point. All right, Arsenal for Democracy will be right back in just a moment. If you really, really, really have complaints about this segment, you can email afdradio@gmail.com. I'm probably not going to respond. I will listen to what you have to say. I'll take it into consideration. You're probably not giving me any new information that I haven't already heard or know, because again, I do actually have a lot of familiarity with gun ownership and gun culture. But if you really don't like that segment, afdradio@gmail.com. Don't send any threats. That's a waste of your time. That's a waste of my time. That's a waste of the First Amendment. We'll be right back in just a moment.